So we just keep working this way, slowly, slowly, to chip away at our notion of our separate self, of the permanence of conditions that we want, and the denial of conditions we don't. I was thinking recently, it's been about a little over 2 years since I had my cancer diagnosis, and at a two-year mark, I mean, it's this particular kind that it's not like 2 years and you have a party and you're all done with it, or 5 years and you have a party and you're done with it. So you don't ever have a party to be done with it, because it's always a possibility of coming back. And so, but after 2 years, the general way of doing it is to have your tests a little bit more spread apart. So it's like, well, you're a little bit past this. So it's been about 2 years, and I started thinking, oh yeah, and I started realizing that, started feeling like, oh yeah, well, maybe this is done, and how it is with our lives. We get up and something isn't in your face, so you just don't pay attention to it. And then I belong to this listserv of people who have this same disease, and darn it, if message after message wasn't from a person who, I was all clear for 2 years, I was all clear for 2.5 years, and it was just like, oh God, so it was like first the sort of the fear in the pit of my stomach, and it's like, oh yeah, remember, and it just reminded me that, it's a natural forgetting process for us, but there's really no benefit in this forgetfulness, because the awareness of how limited the experience is of health makes it so precious, and makes me really not squander it. Makes me really want to spend every day of it, in the best way I can. And the Buddha said, to be happy, don't place your trust in something that isn't trustworthy. And how often do we do that? Thinking that this is permanent, that's permanent, when it's really not. And that's what I was doing. So that was a really good wake-up call for me. And a couple weeks ago, I saw a rainbow in our ever-changing environment of sun and rain and clouds and water. And so what, I was just thinking about, what is a rainbow? It's an appearance that comes out of a certain set of conditions. It's really beautiful. It looks can look really big and bold, take over the skyline. I was driving along, pull my car over. It's so wonderful. And yet it's just, we know what it is. It's just a set of conditions that shine light through water. There's nothing really substantial to it. And it's as substantial as anything else, as any of us, So can we see everything with that nature, with, that it's as fleeting and lovely and precious as a rainbow? So it's both vivid, really vivid, and really insubstantial. I want to tell this little story that a friend told me about her 10-year-old daughter. And she said it was one morning before school, and their cat had died, and a neighbor had died, and the daughter was saying, where'd she go? And, and my friend was saying, well, I don't know, I really don't know, where do they go, And she was kind of starting this whole conversation, and then she said, all we really have is the present moment. And she said her 10-year-old just started laughing. And so my friend was kind of laughing with her. She says, why are you laughing? And she's just laughing, and she said, all we have is the present moment, And it was like my friend thought, I want to get it like you're getting it. She really got it, So that's my story of her. I wanted to read you this couple paragraphs from this novel, I think, that I read a long time ago called Water Touching Stone. It's about these Tibetan lamas. The lama looked at the patch of the night sky visible through the open portal. I talked to a monk once who had spent years down below, he said, meaning the world outside the high ranges of Tibet. He had gone away lighthearted and came back full of sad news. He said to me that many people had lost the way, that they ignored what was in their hearts because it was the safe way. He thought, incredible as it sounds, that there were millions of people down below who just wanted to live to be old, as if they were enslaved to their bodies. Genden lifted one of the sticks of incense and waved it slowly in the space over the table. So instead of human beings fighting the wrong, he told me, they just say it is for governments to do. And governments say we must have armies to be safe, so armies are raised. And armies say we must have wars to be safe, so wars are fought. And wars kill children and devour souls that have not ripened, all because people just want to be old instead of true. The history of the world, Lokesh thought. So anyway. So we'd be practiced to be true to our potential, to respond to the voice inside that's longing for peace and for happiness, for connection. It may take us a long time, but that doesn't matter. That's not the point. It just matters what we're doing right now in every moment as long as we have. To me, this path really doesn't have many shortcuts. The Buddha told us that the Sutra and the Four Foundations of Mindfulness was the direct path, but he didn't say it was an express path or a shortcut, It's not like fast food. It's all slow food that's served here, more like water dripping on stone. And also, we can see and experience for ourselves that it gives relief right away. You sit down, settle yourself, and begin to follow your breathing. You feel a measure of peace right away. And whenever we become aware that some form, some way that we're thinking is causing us suffering, then we can let it go. Whenever we bring mindfulness to something and say, hey, I'm really beating myself up here. Give myself a break. We can let go. So that's our process of learning. And that just stopping that running around in distraction and worry, and settling down with our breath, is a big transformative change and is a model for everyone else. So the definition, there's a phrase called the long enduring mind, and that kind of speaks to the slow process happening. The definition of duration in the I Ching is duration, the self-contained and therefore self-renewing movement of an organized, firmly integrated whole, taking place in accordance with immutable laws and beginning anew at every ending. Whatever endures can be created only gradually by long continued work and careful reflection. So that's the wisdom from the I Ching. And to me, that's how we take our seat. We take our seat not, wanting to cook something fast, but just to be willing to be present. There was this great story I heard of Pablo Casals, the famous cellist, who when at 93 was still practicing 3 hours a day. And someone asked him why he was still practicing at 93, 3 hours a day. And he said, his comment was, I'm beginning to see some improvement. So if you want to cultivate patience, think of Pablo Casals. So just little by little, I'm still doing the scales at 93. We're still coming back to our in-breath and our out-breath. Infuse your life with mindfulness. So to me, also another value of daily mindfulness is, it's Thay's teaching on the non-toothache. It's like a challenge happens, and we're just, our energy is all focused on it, on this challenge, and then it goes away. You know, relationship challenge, an economic challenge, a health challenge, whatever. And we're so grateful, you know, immediately. And then that kind of fades away, you know. So Ty talks about having a toothache, and then the toothache goes away, and oh my gosh, the first hour, the first day, we're just like, nothing could be better, you know. I'd give $1 million to have this toothache be gone, and it's gone, and we're so grateful. And, you know, then you ask somebody a week later, you know, how's your level of gratitude for not having a toothache right now? You know, it's not all that present. And so to me, that's what mindfulness does. Mindfulness fills us with that energy of awareness so that we can have that gratitude. And, you know, in my sort of manipulative little mind, it means maybe I don't need to have the toothache then if my level of gratitude is fully there, you know, which is probably just my little way of trying to control the world. But anyway, you know, having that foundation of that gratitude can do nothing but help us, you know, to have a happier life. So forgiveness, opening the heart, shining the light, letting go of false perceptions and stories. You know, all of this takes our steady, loving attention. And what else do we have to do? It's our continued turning towards waking up, you know, making that choice to wake up towards living an aware, mindful life. Ty tells us that each one of us is a flower, so we can see our natural beauty blossoming just by that careful, slow, loving attention that we bring to life. So there's another part of the sutra. It's not in our book, or it's a tacked on. All these things are tacked on at the end of the sutra, like the seven factors of awakening and these practices. And there's another practice. It's in our chant book, so I'm not sure why it's not in this book. But it's called the assurance of attainment. And so this is something that the Buddha, you know, talked about at the end of this teaching of this sutra. And I'm going to read it to you, which is kind of really interesting. He says, bhikkhus, who's all of us, he who practices the four establishments of mindfulness for 7 years can expect one of two fruits, the highest understanding in this very life, or if there remains some residue of affliction, he can attain the fruit of no return. No return is just, we're in the path. We're in this Dharma stream. And no matter what happens, how we manifest our lives and next incarnation of ourselves in whatever form, we'll be in the stream of the Dharma. And then he goes on and he says, let alone 7 years, bhikkhus. So it's kind of like, to me, he's kind of like, wait a minute. Whoever practices the four establishments of mindfulness for 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 years, or 1 year, for 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, or 2 months, or 1 month, or half a month, can also expect one of two fruits, either the highest understanding in this very life, or if there remains some residue of affliction, he can attain the fruit of no return. So he did kind of go to fast food, didn't he? It's like 2 weeks, you can. So to me, so he goes on, sorry. That is why we said that this path, the path of the four grounds for the establishment of mindfulness, is the most wonderful path which helps beings realize purification, transcend grief and sorrow, destroy pain and anxiety, travel the right path, and realize nirvana. So, to me, Ram Dass says a similar thing. In this, his own words here, it says, the hardest state to be in is one in which you keep your heart open to the suffering that exists around you and simultaneously keep your discriminative wisdom. Once you understand that true compassion is the blending of the open heart and quiet mind, it is still difficult to find the balance. Most often we start out doing these things sequentially. We open our hearts and get lost in the melodramas. And then we meditate and regain our quiet center by pulling back in from so much openness. Then once again, we open and get sucked into the dance. So it goes, cycle after cycle. It takes a good while to get the balance. You have to stay right on the edge of that balance. It seems impossible, but you can do it. At first, when you achieve this balance, it is self-consciously maintained. Ultimately, however, you merely become the statement of the amalgam of the open heart and the quiet mind. There is no more struggle. It is just the way you are. So I think that's what the Buddha's talking about and where he's pointing us. And that's where we really all can be. So let's do a meditation. Oh, before we start the meditation, actually, there is one thing I wanted to talk about, and this is going to be a meditation on intention setting. And I wanted to tell a story. Actually, just about now is when the winter retreat is happening, is beginning. The winter retreat is something that's gone on since the time of the Buddha. It was called the rainy season retreat. And it was for the Buddha and his students spent a lot of time just walking and going and offering the teachings all over the place. But they would, for the 3 months of this winter period, when it rained very heavily, they would come and stay together. And they would stay in the monastery or wherever they were living. And partly because when it rained really hard, a lot of bugs would come up on the road, and they didn't want to be killing bugs all the time as they are all tromping around. but also it creates a really wonderful bonding in community. They stay together, and they don't leave, and they study together. And so it's a deepening of your understanding and your practice together. And so I'm sure that many traditions do this, and in Thais monasteries, the monastics all stay in the monastery for a three-month period over the winter retreat. As a matter of fact, if they have to leave, they don't stay for the three-month period. They don't consider that they progress a year in their monastic, you know, elderhood. So it's already started in Plum Village. And it's starting, I believe, probably tomorrow at Deer Park. So in a sense, we're beginning right now. We can set an intention and begin to practice with them. And was it 2004 that Deer Park, we had the winter retreat at Deer Park with Thai? I think it was 2004. There was one, Thai usually is in Plum Village for this, but 1 year he came to Deer Park and was at Deer Park for the whole 11 weeks, I think it was, of the winter retreat. And several of us went down there for different periods of time. And Robert and I went down with the intention of staying the whole 11 weeks. We stayed 7, and then Robert's mom died, so we had to leave. But when you go and plan to stay for the whole time, you can go through the same process that the monastics go through. And that is to set an intention and have one or more mentors to work with through this period of time. And so there's a ceremony where the monastics really would get up and say what their intention for this period of time was in their practice. And it was so wonderful. You know, I remember a lot of them were, you know, to develop loving kindness and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then this one really senior monk got up and he said, to bring my full attention to walking meditation, when I'm walking, to really be walking. And I thought, oh, it was so concrete. And I realized, you know, if I could do that, then that attention, that focus and concentration would spill over to everything else in my life. I don't have to do everything if I just need to do one thing with that full loving kindness. So we have this is the perfect time for us to set our own intentions for, you know, at least the period of the winter retreat, which is about 3 months long, and then who knows how long. So we'll do a little meditation, and you may have already thought about this, or something else may come to you. Grounding yourself in this moment through your breathing. Bring to mind one way that you are already practicing mindfulness in your daily life. Bring it to your sensory awareness. Notice how that practice feels in your mind and your body. When you remember to do this, and now bring to mind one quality or practice that you plan to and aspire to cultivate in your daily life. Imagine how you will do this specifically. Feel in all your senses what it is like to manifest this quality or practice. Infuse your whole body and mind with this happiness, this fulfillment. And now come home to your breath. Release all your thoughts. And just rest in the beauty of this moment as it is. So as we did at Deer Park, it's very helpful to share your aspirations with the group, because we are all here to support you. I remember in my first year of college, there was a requirement. You couldn't graduate unless you took a speech class. Oh my gosh, I was like, oh, you're kidding. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to take it and get it over with. And there were 20, and then 2 years later I transferred and probably didn't have to have ever gone through that. But anyway, it was wonderful. There were about 20 people in the class, and we had to give, it was just a quarter, but we had to give like 10 speeches, each one of us. I was like, oh my gosh. God. But we were all, it was like we were all so supportive of one another because we were in the same boat, you know. When you'd stand up there and stutter, and everybody going, yeah, yeah, you could do it, great, you know. So it's very helpful to get that energy. And I'm very grateful that I took that class. So just be bold and speak out, and it'd be very nice to share for yourself, you know, what the thing that you have thought of that you're already doing, the quality or the practice that you is already in you. It's really important for that acknowledgement before you go on to what your aspirations are.